The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.
Episode 25 of The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories, recalls the 1979 season. This was the year of the famous Milltown Massacre, while Cork and Monaghan were also blitzed as the Kingdom set up another All-Ireland final against Dublin. Throughout the programme, we'll reproduce extracts from the Kerryman newspaper. Gary O'Sullivan's will be the voice you hear each time.
Part 1.
In 1979, Kerry were searching for two in a row, having put paid to Dublin in the 78 final. Kerry opened the season with a 36 points victory over Clare, a game which has gone down in history as the Milltown Massacre. There were two changes from the previous year's All-Ireland final for the meeting with Clare in Milltown Malbay. Vincent O'Connor was a late replacement for the injured Sean Walsh. Tommy Doyle started in place of Ogie Moran. Kerry and Clare were level after 10 minutes at 2 points each. Goal number one for Kerry came from Vincent O'Connor after 11 minutes. The Kingdom still only led 1-7 to 4 points 20 minutes in. 10 minutes from half-time, Pat Spillane punched a Tommy Doyle cross home for goal number two. Tim Kennelly set Ger Power up for the third goal 6 minutes before the break. Owen Liston also goaled before the short whistle. Kerry were leading 4-9 to 6 points at half-time. The Kingdom had the ball in the net 5 times in the second period. Mikey Sheehy in the 6th minute, Owen Liston after 13, Pat Spillane 7 minutes from time, and then in the closing 4 minutes, Ger Power and Spillane again for his hat-trick. It ended 9-21 to 1-9. Strange thing is, when people refer to the Milltown Massacre, one thing that's forgotten is that the tally scored by Clare was the highest recorded against Kerry that season. Kerry forward, Pat Spillane.
Clare scored more against us in 79 than any other team in the championship. Believe it or not, they scored more against Kerry than any other team in 79. Do you know one of the things about it, and this was the thing about, I mean, great teams have ruthlessness. Do you know, like Kilkenny Hurlers now, whatever, like, and it's one of the qualities you like to see in a team is a ruthlessness that you never ease up. But the ruthlessness by Kerry was because of the fact that there was as many fellas on the sideline as good as you. And even against, and Miko selected on for him, and if you didn't take your chances against Clare and somebody else came in and banged in 3 goals, well then, geez, he'd be in the pole position for the Munster final. So, oh Christ, no, it was fear of, like, you weren't going to, you got your opportunity and you were going to avail of every chance that came away.
Owen Liston attributes displays such as the one against Clare to competition for places.
Any championship match, you're trying to hone your skills. You're reaching a good level of fitness, so you should be jumping out of your skin, really. And you're mad to kind of experiment with different things because you know you're going to be using this during the year, and you just want to see, are you sharp, are you able to do this, are you able to do that? And unfortunately, that Clare team, we had a good team, like, at that stage. We had a good mixture of youth and experience, and there was fierce competition for places. And I think it was a competition for places more than anything else. Like, you had some fabulous players just below the line there. There was Joe Driscoll, Vincent Connor, Dermot Donoghue, you know, there was some superb players, you know, Bernard Sullivan, you know, there's some players that were putting pressure on us, like.
Unsurprisingly, the Kerry selectors gave a vote of confidence to the 15 from the Clare win for the Munster final. Sean Walsh, who had missed the season opener due to an ankle injury, was again off the starting 15 for the Munster final. Walsh recalls the training methods the team faced at the time.
I had a very bad ankle injury for about 2 months, and what I do remember is the hard training we used to get from Mick Dwyer that time. You know, it was rough stuff looking back in it, you know, but I think modern trainers mightn't agree with his methods, but it made us mentally very tough. He was big into, you know, stamina work and rounds of the field and bringing us over the edge. I think his type of training was, I mightn't be able to do the same type of training as John O'Keefe would, or wouldn't be as good at it, but I was brought over the edge at a certain level and John O'Keefe was brought over the edge at another level. I think that's what Mick Dwyer was very good at, just bringing every player to his optimum and over the edge.
The opening 5 minutes of the Munster final saw opponents Cork register 1 point and 2 wides. Kerry hit back in the best possible fashion.
Ger Power made a scintillating run from the sideline, making the Cork defence look absolutely porous, and he left Billy Morgan helpless with a well-placed low shot. That was a real sickener for Cork, who above all else didn't want to start like that.
Mikey Sheehy and Pat Spillane pointed, Tommy Doyle did likewise, his shot going over off the crossbar. After surviving early Cork pressure, Kerry had raced into a 1-3 to 1 point lead. Cork were given the perfect chance for a goal of their own in the 13th minute. However, John Courtney's penalty was sent over the bar. Three Pat Spillane points and another courtesy of Mikey Sheehy made the score Kerry 1-7, Cork 2 points. After Denny Allen put over for Cork, the Rebel net had a narrow escape. Ger Power palmed over advancing goalkeeper Billy Morgan. The ball seemed destined for the net, but it just cleared the crossbar. Cork did manage a goal before the break through Jimmy Barry Murphy. At half-time, Kerry led 1-8 to 1-3. Cork were to the fore early on in the second period, their pressure leading to a second penalty of the afternoon for the Rebels.
Charlie Nelligan left a centre from Declan Barron drop. Pat Kavanagh manufactured a penalty, and this time Dinny Allen was given the job of taking it. Allen struck the ball to the right of Nelligan, but the Castle Island man made a great diving save, pushing the ball out for a 50.
A Cork point followed, and the next score in the 44th minute also belonged to the Rebels.
With the ball hopping in front of him, Jimmy Barry Murphy could have gathered it, as most players would have done. But out of the corner of his eye, he obviously spotted Dinny Allen alone on the edge of the square, and as he was about to be challenged, he flicked a perfect pass with his leg to Allen, who punched the ball past Nelligan.
The goal left the minimum between the teams. Kerry 1-8, Cork 2-4. Cork, though, would not score for the remaining 26 minutes. Kerry, in the meantime, racked up the points through Mikey Sheehy, Ger Power, Pat Spillane, Ger Power once more, Power again, and sub Sean Walsh. Man of the match, Power netted his and Kerry's second goal in the closing minute.
Who else to apply the finishing touch to a well-executed movement than Ger Power? He had a gap on Billy Morgan's left, and he placed the ball to perfection in it.
Power finished the day with a tally of 2-4, the same as the entire Cork team. Kerry beat Cork 2-14 to 2-4. There was one change to the Kerry team for the All-Ireland semi-final against Monaghan. Sean Walsh came in at centre-forward for Tommy Doyle. Kerry had this game in the bag by the quarter-hour mark.
John O'Keefe clearing the ball out here in this semi-final of 1979. Mikey Sheehy to Paddy Lynch. Paddy Lynch on to John Egan again. John Egan, what a great game he had last year. Here's Jack O'Shea again wearing that familiar number 8. Jacko breaks the tackle into Spillane. Inside Spillane is Bomber. Bomber clips it high and it's gone over the bar for a point.
Oh, great point by Kerry. The hole into the field. There was 8 players involved there. They're motoring well. The big high ball came into the square. Bomber list and went up. And when the Bomber goes up, something is going to happen. He punched the ball over the bar. Paddy Lynch involved in everything at the moment.
Paddy Lynch clearing it again out to Owen Liston, who's left his front forward. Bert Mees out in front of the Hogan stand. Owen Liston on solo number 5. Still Owen Liston. Across now to Mikey Sheehy, jinking his way around 2 or 3 Monaghan players, looking at the post and landing it in top of the net. Mikey Sheehy.
It's all so easy for Kerry. Mikey Sheehy, the maestro, the man from Austin Stacks, took that pass from Bomber Liston and just popped the ball over the bar.
Ger Power in again. Ger Power for the Bomber. It must be a goal, and it is. Monaghan have no answer to this.
Yeah, the Bomber is absolutely fine. Ger Power got the ball, could have shot himself, gave the ball to the Bomber, and the Bomber turned around and he just flicked the ball with his hands into the back of the net. It's like basketball at times.
Tim Kennelly clears the ball for Kerry. Ger Power, Mikey Sheehy over his head, beautifully into Ger Power. He didn't even know he was there. Power in full flight. No! What a goal from Ger Power.
Oh, great bit of teamwork there by the two Austin Stacks men. Mikey Sheehy, the ball hopped in front of him. He just flicked it over his head. And without looking into Ger Power, he knew that his teammate was inside him, and Power went right through, kicking into the Kennelly. Goal, blasted the ball into the back of the net. Great Kerry goal. They're absolutely flying. This is a mismatch. Monaghan could have stayed at home. Kerry are absolutely walking away with it.
Paddy Lynch to Mick Spillane in the left corner back, going deep into Monaghan territory now. Here comes Mick Spillane, transfers it on to Jack O'Shea. Jack O'Shea going through with full belt. Here's Jack O'Shea. They're fouling him at the moment. Referee says play on. Mikey Sheehy to the Bomber, and it's gone into the side netting.
But what a lovely move it was. And once again, Jack O'Shea was involved in the whole thing. But the ball just went into the side and it went wide. Kerry are absolutely mesmerising Monaghan.
Kerry had opened up an 8-point lead by this stage, 2-3 to 1 point. The Kingdom led 2-5 to 4 points at half-time. Kerry had 3 points in the first 5 minutes of the second period. Then
Caspian with a brilliant pass to Owen Liston with an equally brilliant pass, but Paddy Linden comes out from the Monaghan goal for once and reads the situation well, and the ball is out now towards the middle of the field. Sean Walsh trying to get the ball back for Kerry. It's cleared into the Kerry half-back line where it should be and is. Paddy Lynch is, who gathers it with very, very little ease and plays it outside to John O'Keefe. John O'Keefe, the way these Kerry boys click into motion is something to behold. Ger Power, a pinpoint pass inside for Mikey Sheehy and into the back of the net.
And as you said, a pinpoint pass. They and the words he used with it into Mickey Sheehy, and Mickey Sheehy, the Austin Stacks man, just turned around nice, cool, calm and collected, and Joe Powers passed from way under the Cusick stand. It bit with the over the backs and forwards. Mickey got it, took one or two little solos and just threw the ball, or if you like, hand passed it, whatever way you want to put it, past the goalkeeper. Another goal for Kerry. They're absolutely flying.
10 minutes later, in the 58th minute, Kerry repeated the trick.
That's Spillane again releasing. Ogie Moran wearing number 16. Ogie inside. Oh, the Monaghan defensive messed it up. Mikey Sheehy into Leston and back to Mikey Sheehy, and as easy as you like into the back of the net.
Yeah, but this is very embarrassing stuff for Roscommon. Kerry are absolutely in scintillating form because this, they're just putting, there's four goals they've scored now, Gary.
Goal number 5 for Kerry also belonged to Sheehy.
That's Spillane inside once again to Mikey Sheehy, and in again to the roof of the net, and Monaghan are absolutely destroyed here.
They're absolutely shell-shocked. It's 5-14 to 7 points at the moment, and Kerry are absolutely strolling away with this game. It's completely and utterly one-sided, but Kerry, I can tell you, Gary, you're going to take a lot of beating.
Sheehy also had time to put over a free from 50 yards as he ended the game with 3-5 to his name. The Kingdom were through to another All-Ireland final against Dublin. The final score against Monaghan was 5-14 to 7 points in Kerry's favour. Afterwards, Kerry selector and former fullback Joe Cahan proclaimed this set of Kerry forwards the greatest to ever represent the county. The same Joe Cahan had an unusual pre-All-Ireland final exchange with a member of the clergy. The Pope visited Ireland in 1979, and the Irish Times recalled how
one day in Tralee, a priest who they say must be nameless called to see Joe Cahan, and short of falling on bended knees, pleaded for one ticket. Joe, as everybody knows, is a man of some considerable devilment, said that a ticket could be produced for him on one condition. That condition being a prominent place for Joe at the Papal Mass in Limerick. The priest was delighted. No trouble at all, he said. And what's more, if you guarantee to get me that ticket, I'll guarantee to get you not only a place at the Mass, but also a private audience with the Pope. Joe looked astonished at this offer. Listen, he said, if you can introduce me to John Paul, I'll do my level best to find a place for you in the Kerry team.
Of a more serious nature for Dublin was that, with the papal visit on the horizon, the All-Ireland final was played earlier than usual, on September 16th. That meant Dublin forward Jimmy Keaveney, sent off in the Leinster final, would miss the decider, as his 2-month suspension would not be up until the following Saturday. That year's decider allowed Pat Spillane to uphold his unique pre-All-Ireland final superstition.
I would be very religious. We would have never left home without my mother and us putting holy water on everything we were, from the togs to the socks to the boots to the laces to the whatever. So holy water would always have been doused on everything, and before going out in the game, I would always like to stand in the same place in the photograph. I would always like to sit in the same place in the dressing room. I would always like to have come out in the same position running out on the field. Yeah, if superstition is, and before every All-Ireland final, I think I would have eaten 2 packets of Maltesers at 1 o'clock. Just pure imagination, and it's all about keeping yourself happy and keeping psychologically up. I mean, I convinced myself that I was getting bundles of energy from Maltesers, so you know, different strokes for different folks, and then going to a game. This is an unusual thing in the sense that I know psychologists now have a name for a sports psychologist, but going to every match. Just take All Ireland semi-finals and finals. Going in by bus to Croke Park, I would have invariably probably sat alone, but I would have had the eyes closed, and I would have been visualising, going through my head, everything about the game. And like I said, sports psychologists now have a word for this called visualisation. And you visualise, you don't visualise, I mean, the one thing I would always, for me, the glass is always half full rather than half empty, and I would always have been positive, and I would always have believed that I could beat the fellow McAmin, and I would always believed I could score so much. I mean, whether you did or you didn't, but it's important to be positive. And in visualisation, what you always imagined was all the positive things coming off. So getting to the ball first round the opponent, kicking the ball over the back. And that would be I would be rerunning that through my head for a half an hour before going into match.
The greatest day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles, brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams.
Part 2.
Tommy Doyle returned for the final. Ogie Moran also started. Ger Power and Vincent O'Connor did not. Sean Walsh went to midfield with Moran at centre forward. Mikey Sheehy pointed inside the first 30 seconds. Tony Hanahu replied for Dublin. Kerry then kicked into gear, culminating in a 10th minute goal.
So the free now by Ogie Moore in the 79 final. This ball is driven inside again and there's a whole cluster of players going for it. Pat Spillane has got the break and Pat Spillane takes the kick and it's now 2-1 to Dublin.
Yes, indeed, 2-1. That's the second point. Mickey Sheehy scored a point just after the start for Kerry and Pat Spillane came out, got that ball, come around. Dublin played in their 6th consecutive All-Ireland final. They're the first team to do it since Wexford done it away back in the 1800s. A great achievement altogether. Kerry up against it today really gives this Dublin team 2-1. That's Pat Spillane.
And it's Pat Spillane attacking again and he's causing consternation in this Dublin defence with the outside of the right boot. It hits the crossbar on the upright in actual fact inside there. Kerry have it back again. This is Owen Liston. Owen Liston, the man that did the damage last year. He's starting off again this year. Rishi, great point for the Bomber.
Yeah, great point for the Bomber. He's looking fit and trim and brimful of energy. And just Pat Spillane who skipped his way through. Once again he hit for a point with the right leg. Hit it with the outside of the right leg. Curled across the face of the goal. Hit the post, the top of the post. Came down. Bomber got the ball. Bang over the bar. Bomber Liston with the bearded Bomber over the bar by him, and Kerry lead 3 points to no score.
Well, the Bomber got 3 goals last year. How many of them will he get this year? That's the question. Kerry leading here in Croke Park in the 1979 All-Ireland final, and Brian Mullins brings one down from the clouds and is gathered inside there again, cut out by Paddy O'Shea wearing right half. We're now starting at right half back this afternoon, and of course Ger Power crying off the Kerry team for this one, and Tommy Doyle has got his place, but it's Dublin now again, who's trying to attack again. Pat Spillane doing his utmost to try and get the ball back for the Kingdom. So too John O'Keefe, good work by both of them, a free to Kerry.
Very good work by the defenders there, Gary. The defence has done exceptionally well really, and every time the Dublin came through they've held them to scoreless so far, and that was a lovely block down by John O'Keefe. He came out, just got his hand in there. Good work. The Kerry defence has done very well.
Well, it's going to be free in the half-back line as soon as the ball is retrieved for Kerry Bigas. It's gone out over the line on the way over in the far side. And it's Kerry at the moment who lead here by 3-1. And this free is going to be taken in the middle of the field, I think, by Paddy O'Shea. He's got a firm grip on the ball. And yes, indeed, Paddy O'Shea is placing this ball down very carefully indeed. The man from Ungwerthupton, he'd look up now and he'd see what his options are. Well, this fine dry day in this September day in 1979. High ball for the Bomber and it's broken inside to Ogie. Ogie for Sheehy for the goal and rifled into the net by Mikey Sheehy.
The ace goal kicker, the ace scorer for Kerry, and the long high ball came in there, it broke down, and it broke down to Ogie Moran. Ogie Moran just passed it to Mickey Sheehy. He had no one to beat Johnny Cullen, but the finish was absolutely thunderous, right into the top of the net. Cracking finish, beautiful finish, and a lovely pass by Ogie Moran into Mickey.
Looking back on his strike, Mikey Sheehy feels Ogie Moran could just as easily have tucked it away himself.
I think Ogie could only have scored it himself, but I remember just from a free kick by Paddy O'Shea. It was something we would have worked on in training anyway, was to pump it in the long one into Bomber. And Mickey Holden, the late Mickey Holden, was marking the Bomber. And David Forn was marking me. And David Forn was a big, fine footballer. And he was a big, big guy. But David made the mistake of jumping with the Bomber and Mickey Holden. So I stayed down with Ogie. And Ogie, actually, the ball broke to Ogie. I said we were about 20 yards out, and there was all the other backs were out, so it was a kind of, you know, it was a one-on-one, and Ogie was alongside me, or I was alongside him, and Ogie passed it to me, and, you know, thankfully I scored it.
Advantage Kerry, 1-3 to 1 point after 10 minutes. That blistering start by the Kingdom was followed by a more mundane next 10 minutes. Mikey Sheehy responded to an Anton O'Toole point for Dublin. The score read Kerry 1-4, Dublin 2 points. Entering the 24th minute, Kerry went back in the attack.
So that free there now from Mikey Sheehy makes it 1-4 to Kerry, 2 points to Dublin. That's the way things are going so far in this Kerry v Dublin 1979 All-Ireland Senior Football Final out into the middle of the field, and again it's gathered by Shawnee Walsh. Brian Mullins complaining that he should have got a free, the referee not agreeing with him. Shawnee Walsh taking his time, driving it into the square. Oh, Liston has flipped it over Collins' head and into the back of the net, but the question is Rishi, was he in the square?
Yeah, the umpire is pointing down, Gary. It just happened right in front of the umpire. He's pointing down. That's going to be disallowed, but wonderful heading by Sean Wynn, superb feeling over Brian Mullins' head in the middle of the field, sent it across, Bamalistan was planked inside in the verge of the small square, hammed the ball into the net, no says the umpire, disallowed.
Disallowed, it remains 1-4 to 2 points, so a let off for the Dubs, and they're relieved to see that one, and the man that caused them problems last year, getting 3 of them denied, 1 so far. Bernard Brogan hits it high, and Bernard Brogan hits it left and wide, and the Dublin side are the rock so far, we see.
Yeah, Brogan will be very disappointed with that, because the ball came up the field after that disallowed goal by the Bamalistan. Brogan got the ball outside the 51 metre line, and really he should have popped that over the bar but pulled the ball wide. That's a bad miss for Dublin.
Pat Spillane and Mikey Sheehy did register Kerry scores as the Kingdom moved ahead by 1-6 to 2 points.
Charlie Nelligan once again out, placing this ball from the edge of the square, and he's stolen a few inches with it, but the referee gives him the benefit of the doubt. Outside there is Jimmy Dean involved there. Mick Spillane back there too, and Mick Spillane and the Kerry defence are doing very well, and this is Tommy Doyle wearing number 17, but of course starting it right half forward today in place of the Interger Power, and what speed Tommy Doyle is showing. Way he goes, this is some run by Tommy Doyle, this is Ogie Moran. And Ogie looking for the point, but into the hands of Paddy Connor. What a run by Tommy Doyle there, though.
Great run by Tommy Doyle there. Wonderful run by him. But eventually the ball finished up into the hands of Paddy Cullen.
Oh, Paddy Cullen, he gives it a Christmas present early to Pat Spillane. He'll flick this one over. That mistake goes down definitely to the Dublin keeper that time.
Yes, indeed, because he came out with the ball after clearing it. He passed it straight out into Pat Spillane, and the Temple Norman came through. He was like a hare. He danced through the Dublin defence and punched the ball over the bar. That was an absolutely superb point by him. Up the ball once, solid at once. After the second time, and the back end of the goalkeeper came out, and he kind of dodged around him. Gary, if they collided with Spillane here, I said a stretch would be needed.
Dublin then pointed, but the half ended as it began, with Kerry in the ascendancy.
So then, that score by Bobby Doyle has brought a little bit of respectability back into things now. We see 1-6 to 3 points, but Kerry's still very much in command.
Yeah, very much in command and looking good, playing well. Gary getting a lot of chances, taking their scores well. Charlie Nelligan, that was unusual there. That was a point for Dublin. And Charlie Nelligan put the ball down in the verge of the small square, and he was going to kick it out. Of course, he was put it down on the 21 metre line, and it was the umpire who told him, look, you're wrong there. But the referee comes in and he's warning him for killing time. But really, it was a mistake by Charlie, really.
It was indeed, and Charlie Nelligan now is going to take this kick out again. 1-6 to 3 points out for the middle. They'll jump for it. Staying down will be Paddy Lynch and also Pat Spillane. And Pat Spillane, Brian Mullins flings himself onto the boot, but it's no good. Mikey Sheehy and Owen Liston involved inside there. Liston again, another thorn on the side again of this Dublin defence. They cannot cope with this man at all. Liston going through, surely was tripped. That's a close in free to Kerry.
Yeah, Liston, he's been an outstanding game. He's so fit looking today because he took that pass from Mikey Sheehy and he got right into the 14-yard line, and just he was going to let the ball off when the Dublin defenders came up behind him and just cut the two legs from under him. This, as the fella said, would be an easy tip over free for Mikey Sheehy. He'd do it with his eyes closed.
He would indeed, and it's 1-6 to 3. You should hear the crowd. They'll be cheering after this one, because I don't think Mikey'll miss this one. Here he comes. Bernard Brogan runs out, but he may as well run the whole length of the field. It doesn't matter. 1-7 now to Kerry, 3 points to Dublin.
Yes, indeed, Mikey Sheehy, deadly accurate. The Bamalistan, the big shoes Bamalistan, the big man in the verge of the Dublin Square, is causing havoc, as you said, the very same last year. The bit of height, he's the target man, he's the man they're feeding off of, he's the man that they're letting all the ball into.
The kick out gathered again in the middle of the field by Shawnee Walsh, and Shawnee is fouled there in the middle of the field, and the Dublin players are feeling the effect of that tackle. I think it was Tony Hanahu, and it's Paddy O'Shea now, and he struts back and he hops back, going to take this, showing a serious level of fitness. Paddy to take this one, 1-7 to 3 points. Paddy drives it long, the bomber goes high again, and Mikey looking to get to it, but not this time. Dublin trying to come out there, and 6 and 7's back there. Pat Spillane is putting serious pressure on that defence, and Dublin are pressure. Spillane is in again, and Paddy Cullen comes to the rescue, but the Dublin defence region didn't know what to do back there.
There were like 6s and 7s there. The ball was fielded magnificently by Sean Welch to finish up the Gurdon Square, and the Dublin defender, if a 14-year-old did what he did, got the ball, came across the goal, would you believe, right in front of the goal, and gave the ball, tried to pass it back to Paddy Cullen, and the ball was clear.
And it's John Egan coming through again, still John Egan. John Egan drives it high again. This high ball is causing problems for Dublin. Up for it will go the bomber again, and Owen Liston has it again. Owen Liston is the general chance, and Paddy Cullen on the line, stopped. Oh, how lucky if Kerry have been.
Oh, but that was a great save by Paddy Cullen, and once again for Bama Listen, the big men, the route, one ball going right into the virtual square. Listen got it, broke it out, Mickey Sheehy was inside there, as was Joe Powell, tried to get it past Cullen. Cullen threw himself down the top of the ball, made a great save.
The gap at half time was 7, Kerry 1-7, Dublin 3 points. Mikey Sheehy struck the Dublin bar before points from Pat Spillane and John Egan stretched Kerry's lead to 1-9 to 3 points. Kerry were strolling, but they were in for a rude awakening.
And the ball is driven inside again, and Mick Spillane is under a bit of pressure with Bobby Doyle, and still is Doyle walking his way through now. There's danger here, here's Jim Ronan going through and going, surely he'll flick it in, and he is. He's flicked it in, and we see it's a goal for Dublin.
Yeah, but good work by Bobby Doyle. He came in along the in line, Ronan got the ball there, there was two. He was right in the end of the passing movement. Bobby Doyle just flicked the ball across the face of the goal to him. Ronan got the ball there, and Gary, if I might be mistaken, but he was surrounded by players. He literally threw the ball basketball style with his hand into the back of the net. That's 1-9 to 1-3, and it was 1-7 to 1-3 at half time. 2 points by Pat Spillane, and what John Egan had stretched that gap, but Dublin wanted that goal badly.
That goal arrived just 10 minutes into the second period. When Tony Hanahoe pointed for the Dubs, Kerry's lead had been cut to 5 points. 16 minutes into the second half, Jack O'Shea increased the gap to 6. However, the pressure was back on when Paddy O'Shea received his marching orders a minute later. The gap stood at 5, and the clock read 56 minutes when Kerry pressed to the attack.
So now this Kerry free to be taken by Jimmy Deanahan, wearing the number 2 jersey at right cornerback, drives it long inside again, the bomber goes high for it, not able to get to it this time, and Mikey Sheehy trying to get the ball back for Kerry, but it's Brian Mullins that comes out. Brian Mullins gets there ahead of the bomber. Now Jacko's got him pinned in. That's great work off the ball by the Kerry players when they don't have the ball. Out for the middle, Paddy Lynch grabs it. That's a great catch by Paddy Lynch.
Oh,
there,
great Richie. Feeling by Paddy Lynch, wonderful feeling in the middle of the field by the ball first man there, the way he went up and caught that ball, great stuff.
Paddy Lynch takes it quickly to Jacko. Jacko drives it long inside this again, looking for Owen Liston. Owen Liston has it, trying to get inside his man. Still Liston across here for John Egan, and he's pulled to the ground, and the referee, yes, it's gone into the side netting, but it's a penalty to Kerry. Referee quite on the mark.
Must be, because John Egan was right in and goal. Bama Liston got the ball in the dirt of the square. Egan was running in, and Bama Liston passed the ball across him, and he was pulled and he was dragged inside in the square. He was brought down, and the referee said no doubt at all about it. That's a penalty, and rightly so. Who's going to take it?
Well, it's 1-10 to 1-5. Mikey Sheehy pulled down, he went into the side netting, but if he had scored, it wouldn't matter. But now he has a chance to score, because it is Mikey Sheehy who's going to take this penalty kick. It's 1-10 to 1-5. This is a very critical stage in the match. Mikey Sheehy, hands on the hips. The referee wants plenty, plenty of room. And here's Mikey. He'll take about 3 or 4 steps up on this one. Mikey Sheehy against Paddy Cullen, the 1979 All-Ireland final, into the roof of the net. That's a great score from Mikey Sheehy.
Oh, that's a cracking goal for the Ashton Stacks man. He came up and he hit a rocket of a shot with the right leg. Paddy Cullen standing in the goal, he's a big, big man, and because he kicked the ball to Cullen's right hand, and Cullen threw himself at it, just barely touched the ball, and it's now 2-10 to 1-5. Great kick by Sheehy.
Double scores now, Kerry 2-10 to Dublin's 1-5. Kerry were making light of Paddy O'Shea's dismissal. Dublin were a beaten team. Kerry weren't letting up, however.
So then it's a commanding lead for Kerry now once again. 2-11 to 1 goal and 6 points, and Charlie Nelligan is in no rush whatsoever to take this kick out, and Kerry looking good for another All-Ireland title. Well, the Dubs thought that they'd get one back after, of course, winning 76 and 77. Kerry won 78, and now they're about to clinch it for 1979. 2-11, here goes Mikey. Mikey Sheehy inside to Ogie. Ogie inside to Egan. Egan going through like a tank, got around one. Got around two, got around Cullen, and into the net, and that's another All-Ireland for Kerry, we
should. Oh, a superb goal by John Egan, a wonderful goal, but it was all made by Mickey Sheehy in the middle of the field. He went out and he did a Jack O'Shea. He went high in above Friend and Four, got the ball, gave it on to Ogie Morgan. Ogie saw John Egan running in the Sneeman, and the Sneeman came in from the side, and he sold dummies all over the place. The goalkeeper came out, and instead of kicking it, he punched it into the back of the net. 3-11 to 1-6, Kerry lead. But what wonderful feeling by Mickey Sheehy, and a great finish by Egan.
The greatest day. The story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Part 3.
Mikey Sheehy had 2 points for Kerry in the closing minutes, the second of which equaled Jimmy Keaveney's record for an All-Ireland final. In a 3-13 to 1-8 defeat of Dublin, Sheehy's personal tally read 2 goals and 6. Sheehy says it's not about personal glory.
2-6, but, you know, I'll be truth with you, you know, and people would still talk about records. You don't ever, ever think about them out on the pitch. I never, because I'll tell you, that game was won, I'd say, with 10 minutes to go. I could have got two. That's a fact now, because you don't even think about it. But, I mean, all you're doing is you're playing for the team. You know, I mean, individual things are fine to a point, but, I mean, the main thing you want is the team to win and you to get your All-Ireland medal. That's the only thing you'll think about. The team was probably peaking around that time as well, you know, 78, 79, 80, like, you know, and we did. We won that game comfortably. And then against the Dubs again. But to be fair, against Dublin in that All-Ireland final, Jimmy Keaveney was suspended for that, and he was a ferocious loss to Dublin that day.
Mick O'Dwyer had by now well and truly moulded this Kerry team into what he had envisaged for them. Owen Liston says O'Dwyer was keen to make the most of the vast playing area.
The one thing he wanted was to create space, and he wanted quick ball. Quick movement of the ball and space. He'd pull us up loads of times in training if we were all coming together instead of staying out to the wings. So he wanted movement, he wanted space, and he wanted quick movement. They were the general guidelines. But then, you see, from playing together, you develop understandings, like, you know, that we got the idea that Spillane was usually going back, helping out at the back, and so there was extra space, and whoever, if Mikey or John Egan moved out, that corner was free, and they knew then that the ball would be played into that corner, so I'd make sure I'd stand at that side of my men, kind of, so that I'd give it an advantage, and if they were in trouble, then they'd put it into that corner, and, you know, so you developed a lot of that between the players themselves, but Mikko gave us the guidelines and got us fit.
Mickey Ned O'Sullivan credits Mick O'Dwyer with keeping Kerry hungry for success. O'Sullivan recalls a conversation that took place in the wake of the 1975 All-Ireland final victory.
I remember I was teaching in Kailash Taoiseach in Ballyvourney and at the time, and one of the brothers said to me the following week, he says, that team will go on and win 4 or 5 All-Irelands. And he says it's young enough, it's talented enough, as long as they can keep the hunger. And I think 'twas Mick O'Dwyer must accept a lot of the credit there, that he kept the hunger there. And the players became like craftsmen. 'Twas no longer winning All-Irelands, 'twas a pursuit of excellence. That they kept on trying, pushing back the barriers of excellence and striving for this, something that would never be achieved, but they kept pursuing this excellence. Had they just said, we'll win one or two, or we've enough one, they'd have gone and they'd have been just an ornery team. But 'twas this drive, this inner drive for excellence, that made them different and set them apart.
The 1979 All-Ireland final was the first covered by journalist Martin Breheny. Breheny believes that game was the beginning of the end for this particular Dublin team.
I joined the Irish Press in 1979. I would have been in Croke Park for all the other ones, but the first one I would actually have covered would have been the 1979 when Kerry won, I think it was 3-13 to 1-9 or 1-8 or something like that. That was, of course, the year after. Mm-hmm. They had hammered Dublin, that famous 78 final. But 79, really, I mean, people said that 78 was sort of a slight freak dimension, to which there was to some degree, but 79 was the one that really put paid to that Kerry, put paid to that Dublin team, and that was the start, of course, of that. They were in the middle of the great 4-in-a-row era that didn't quite deliver the 5-in-a-row, but that would be my first my first match to cover. I suppose the Dubs were in a downward spiral, but I mean, that rivalry, I could probably never be matched again. You can have, I don't think, say, the Tyrone and Kerry rivalry of the last few years come anywhere closer. I mean, the whole Dublin Kerry thing was just special because there was that the Dubs revolutionised the whole sort of support around that time in the mid 70s. And they set themselves up and winning in 74 and then again in 76. And Mikko's young fellas coming along and having beaten them in 75, then Dublin won 77. So there was a real Ali v Fraser, Arkell v Milhouse dimension to it, really. This was the big showdown between these two every year. And in fact, they met every year for several years, but a remarkable time in Kerry, and never to be forgotten times for Kerry.
Kerry supporter Tom Herlihy remembers the All-Ireland final.
I suppose Dublin were very much in decline then at that stage, in fairness, like, their team were old. I mean, because you have to remember that I'm quite sure the Dublin team, they came in 74, they were nearly moving into that 30s when they came that year. So they were quite sure fairly old at that stage in 79. And Kerry won the 79 final rather easily. That was the year they were captained by the late, great Tim Kinley from the Stowell. And, like, it was a one-sided affair, really, like, because Kerry won it where the exact score at this stage. it's that forgettable, like, for the people that remembers the 5-11 scored in 78. The 79 one was really forgettable.
Future Kerry captain Billy O'Shea documents the 1979 All-Ireland final as his earliest football memory. It was a particularly significant decider for O'Shea, given that his fellow Listowel man, Tim Kennelly, received Sam Maguire that year.
When Tim Kennelly would have been captain of Kerry, that would have been a highlight, because I was born and bred in Listowel, and of course Tim being a Listowel man as well, I think that was probably my earliest memory of All-Ireland success. At the time I would have been about six, and I remember that being a great moment for the town of Listowel, because he was a great man, in fairness to him, and that was probably my earliest memory of football, to be honest.
Former Kerry player, the late Liam Higgins, was for a decade and a half match commentator with Radio Kerry. He once spoke of the importance of defenders such as Tim Kennelly.
A bit surprised he made it so fast into a centre-back, because he didn't have much centre-back play behind, under his belt by the time 75 arrived. But by God, did he cover himself with glory in 75. He did a tremendous game altogether against Cork, a mighty game against Sligo in the semi-final, and I suppose another nearly man-the-match performance in the final against Dublin in 75. And from that on, he was just, you could just put him in centre-back and forget about him. He was so solid, so strong, so safe and dependable under the ball, and a great man to play his full forward line side with good long belt of a ball that was directed up towards his wings or up towards Bomber. He was, you know, he was a kind of a selfless player. He played for everybody and played for all around him.
Kerry's not-so-secret weapon in the 1970s and 80s was Micheál Muirchertach. He was entrusted with the task of training his fellow exiled Kerrymen in the capital.
It was going on unofficially for a while before that, but Gerald McKenna was the county chairman at the time. He was the man, I think, that suggested and asked Micheál Dwyer to become manager. He rang me up and he said, there are a few of them around there, would you look after them? So I did that, and Ray Prendeville was a sub at the time, and Jack O'Shea was in Dublin at the time. He was on the Kerry minor team. And Seamus MacGarrett, he rang me up and he said, there's a young fella that's not bad from South Kerry up there doing a Nanko course. That would be a false course nowadays. He gave me address. He said, would you look after him? So he came training with us. So he was training. Little did he, Ger Power was training with us, and John O'Keefe, and little did he know that within 12 months he'd be playing with them. He played in the league of 76, and they were all playing. They were all young players still. So now, the one thing that I always thought, you know, from looking at teams and talking to players, the one thing that a good player or a player that played well will tell you, that he felt great before the game. So I always thought it was very important to have players fresh on the day. You could have a player very fit but be tired on the day and just wouldn't perform. So the programme that we had, you know, I'd pay a lot of attention to how they felt themselves and what suited them. But then they were naturals, and it was very easy to train them. John O'Keefe was a man that was, conscious of fitness always. And he had been to Loughborough in England, and he knew a lot about fitness, kept himself in great shape always. It was as easy to train Ger Power as a greyhound, you know, and he was as keen as mustard, crazy for football. And he'd been a few years in Dublin wondering would he ever get on the team, because he was looking at players who were on the team for 14 and 15 years, and he felt that he was as good if not better than them. And he had the spirit. And then Pat McCarthy was the strong man, you know, a little bit older, but great strength and good hands and very willing, and considered himself very lucky to get onto the team. Now, he was a vital man. He came all the way into the final unnoticed, and he had a wonderful final. And when you look back he didn't play that much for Kerry. He never played, I think, after 77. But for the few years, he played a lot of very good football and played his part like others that were there much longer than him.
Tim Kennelly by Francis Duggan. A mighty Gaelic footballer, he inspired the Bards to rhyme. He played centre-half-back for Kerry when he was in his prime. A stalwart of the Listowel Emmets, a famous Gaelic football club. And in the town of Listowel, he owned a well-known pub. His name was Tim Kennelly, one of the kingdom's best, and he was not found wanting when he was put to the test. But he did not live to be an old man, to grow stooped and old and grey. In his very early 50s, the great man passed away. With the greats of Gaelic football, he's surely one to rate. The Listowel Emmets clubman was a Kerry GAA great. For Listow Lemmets and for Kerry, he played many a marvellous game, and his name destined to live on in Gaelic football's Hall of Fame. His son Tadhg is a star of Aussie rules football for the Sydney Swans today, and though the mighty Tim Kennelly in eternal rest now lay, he will always be remembered as a Gaelic footballer supreme who won five All-Irelands with a famous Kerry team.
You've been listening to The Greatest Day, a 36-part series documenting the story of Kerry's All-Ireland Senior Football Championship victories. The Greatest Day was presented by John Drummy, written by Joe O'Mahony, and researched and produced by the Radio Kerry Sports team. This programme was made with the support of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland Sound and Vision Scheme.
The Greatest Day, the story of Kerry's 36 All-Ireland football titles. Brought to you in association with Kerry Group, proud sponsors of all inter-county GAA teams. Next week on The Greatest Day.
The worst final for many years.
Spillane has rifled it into an empty net and it's another goal.
I didn't feel well after the training session. I had to go in and have an appendix operation.
We had met Roscommon in the Under 21 final in 78. We were badly handled that day and we didn't forget it.
A wonderful goal by Kerry Catspillane, cutting in through the Roscommon defence like a knife through butter.
It was the one final, I think Mikko has admitted it. It was the one that Kerry shouldn't have won.
I honestly think to this present day, I think if they played football, they'd have won the match. Like, you know, I think they got a little bit over physical.